There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And here we go. Welcome in. FM Talk 106.5's Midday Mobile on a primary runoff Tuesday. I'm Dalton Orwig. You may have heard me on 6 to 9 a.m. or maybe even on Midday Mobile every now and then when Sean drags me in. But you probably know me from Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan. And day number two here, filling in for the big man, Sean Sullivan. And hopefully I have enough of a show planned ahead to keep your attention for a couple hours. I know so many of you waiting on the Paul Feinbaum show coming up at 2 o'clock. But have some guests we'll be talking to. Secretary of State for now, John Merrill, as his term limit is up, and either Jim Ziegler or Wes Allen will be filling that role. Or, well, I'll have to ask my first guest here in a minute if there's actually a Democrat running for Secretary of State. I don't think there is. If there is, I haven't heard of them, unfortunately for them. But we'll talk with John Merrill, quite a bit to get into with him, whether it's these electronic voting machines. Another group has joined the Lindy Blanchard lawsuit against Merrill and the secretary's office, and also want to get into it with him about crossover voting and the big discussion going on in Auburn right now in that state Senate race between Whatley and Hovey, decided by one vote. Also coming up later today in the second hour, 1:30, Dale Leash with Lanyap is joining, and the Mobile Firefighters Association suing the city of Mobile. They say that the city giving bonuses, I guess, to MPD for reaching certain benchmarks and not giving bonuses to firefighters around the city, that that's illegal. So they've filed a lawsuit there, and he's also written quite a bit and spent all day today at the Mobile City Council meeting. We'll see if they talked about redistricting or did the A word come up? Annexation. Plenty for Del Leash to tell us about here. But I'll bring on my first guest, Jeff Poor of The Jeff Poor Show, which you can listen to right here on FM Talk 106.5. And also the podcasts, which are just invaluable if you're wanting to. Well, I guess they're extremely valuable if you're trying to learn more about Alabama politics. And Jeff, thanks for coming on. I think I have the answer for why turnout was expected and so far has been so low today in these elections.
Lay it on us there, Dalton. What you think?
Well, I get in here. I get in the big seat behind the board. I turn on Fox News, and there he is, Benny Thompson, giving the opening remarks to what I think is day four of the Capitol riot hearings. And the answer was right in front of us the whole time. The reason people aren't going out to vote is because they're so enthralled by this television, by these hearings, that they're staying home and they're watching CNN and Fox and MSNBC to get the latest on the January 6th riots. Does that check out?
I think it's entirely possible. I got them all three on in here in my studio here. And normally I have Newsmax, but Newsmax on the Fritz for whatever reason.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, it is wall to wall to wall. January 6th, Liz Cheney cannot get enough of it. Right now, there is a video of William Barr being played, and why do we need Katie Britt or Mo Brooks when we have true statesmen like Liz Cheney, mm-hmm. Adam Kinzinger, and Benny Thompson, and
Schiff.
Zoe Lofgren, Adam Schiff, who is you know, the Frank Underwood wannabe character in this whole saga. It is, you know, who cares about old Jim Ziegler and Wes Allen? We got January 6 shenanigans to get to the bottom of.
Oh, William Barr turned into the star witness, didn't he? He's been on and up front in basically every hearing I've seen so far, and it almost seems like they're running the same clips over and over. But to be honest, after that first night that I watched every bit of the 2 hours, even though I had to hold my eyes open at one part of the night, but I've seen him on a whole lot. But you were talking about these elections we have today. You mentioned a few names there: Jim Ziegler, Wes Allen. That's a race for Secretary of State, of course. Well, I asked it earlier. Is there a Democrat in that race? Or
there is Pamela Lafitte. I believe, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that name right. I, when you were making that that very general statement that I would know, I did not know. So I readied the Google and found it.
Because I keep making that mistake. And even when I'm writing copy, like for this morning's show, that you almost assume in so many of these races that this is the race. And I know that's not necessarily true throughout the state, but I don't know who's more at fault for that. Is that me at fault, or is that the Alabama Democratic Party for not putting up electable candidates, or really just not getting the word out about a whole lot of them?
And before you ask, the Democrat candidate for auditor is Miranda Joseph, I believe. No, wait, that's 2018.
Boy. Is she running again?
I think the auditor is no one is running on the Democrat side, it appears.
All right. Wide open there for auditor.
So whoever wins, unless I'm mistaken, whoever wins this will be, unless there's a bunch of write-ins, will be the next auditor. So
yeah.
Stan Cook or Andrew Sorrell are probably truly, we're at the end of that railroad for sure.
Right.
The Democratic Party in this state was supposed to have this great new awakening. That what was holding it back, remember, it was Nancy Worley.
Right.
It was Joe Reed, the party boss. It turned out that those two knew what they were doing. it's just so difficult in this state to get it together and do something. Remember, these guys talked about, well, we don't have a Twitter account, we don't have this, we don't have that, and now you got a Twitter account, now you have social media presence, and guess what? You're even worse off than you were 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I think personally, I think it's awfully selfish of, and I know you've had him on, he seems like a good guy, but former Senator Doug Jones, awfully selfish of him to go for the fame and the glory and the money of being involved with law firms and being on TV and, you know, making his case for whatever regarding Supreme Court justices. It seemed like when he was down here and when he was senator, and maybe before he was running for senator, he was the one that was at the head of the party trying to make these major changes to the Alabama Democratic Party. And then I'm not sure what kind of thumb on the scale he has anymore, but shouldn't he come back and run that party for the Democrats in the state?
He should have some role. I mean, he's the one that wanted to chop off the king's head, and it didn't work for him. It was kind of one of his big embarrassments as the top elected Democrat in the state. I believe it's Peck Fox, an attorney and trial lawyer in Montgomery, who he was pushing. They did not. It did not happen, and he got beat. I mean, the Joe Reed faction kind of is able to engineer the rules to keep themselves in power, and that's what they did. But I think in the case of Doug Jones, though, give him the benefit of the doubt. I made this prediction yesterday on air. I think Merrick Garland's days are numbered. I think Merrick Garland steps down after the midterms, and I think they're going to nominate Doug Jones. I think Doug Jones is probably a shoe-in in the Senate. He has enough goodwill with the senators. He probably gets confirmed, and he becomes the next attorney general. And then that's kind of – because you watch him now, he's a surrogate for Biden in some ways, maybe unofficially. But on cable news, he's showing up and playing that surrogate role, and I think he's just being prepped for that.
Yeah, and he's almost used like as a whip in some instances out there in D.C. as he's trying to pull Democrats and Republicans one way or the other towards the Biden administration's what they want usually. But that is a fantastic theory that he'll be the next AG. And
well, look at and during the confirmation hearings mm-hmm. for Brown Jackson, I mean, he was her like kind of mentor, her chaperone through the Senate, the halls of the Senate, introducing her to the different senators. He was the liaison. He's played a bigger role in the Biden administration than maybe we realize. I think, and it's just kind of paving the way for him to get a cabinet post. And it looks to me like, you know, everything we're hearing about Merrick Garland and not being more aggressive, going after Trump, going after these January 6th protesters, et cetera, that the left is growing dissatisfied. And Merrick Garland's an institutionalist. He was a judge. He believes in these institutions. He's not going to abuse it. And I think at some point, probably, like I said, after the midterms, he'll walk away and there will be an opening there. I think you'll see a lot of that. There's going to have to be a change in direction for the Biden administration, it's pretty grim right now, but mm-hmm. if they want a Democrat elected in 2024, they're going to have to do something. I think they're going to try to at least, if face value, shake things up.
Yeah, and we'll see. That's something I want to get into later this hour, is now that we're getting through the runoffs here, the 2024 elections are the next big thing, and I'm sure we'll be talking about those basically nonstop from November on. But enough of the Democratic Party inner workings. Let's talk about today and talk about tonight at 8 o'clock. Jeff Poor and myself will be here in this studio that I'm sitting in now to do, I guess, hopefully a post-election recap. I would hope we would have some answers by then. And if not, then that means we would have had much closer races, I think, than we're expecting in a lot of these. You gave your prediction earlier. You said Britt 55, Brooks 45. Which you blame that on the possible low turnout here. If that's the case with some of these most recent polls, Brooks would have had to have gained, and I know the polls aren't necessarily accurate, but he would have had to have gained all of the undecided voters in those polls, and it still wouldn't be enough. I guess the question and the way I want to phrase it to you is there anybody on this ballot that is a game changer for Alabama, regardless of what they're running for? Will we look back in 5 or 10 years and say, hey, that person really went places, and I'm either proud that they represent Alabama or they are a stain on Alabama, and I can't believe that they represent us at some of the highest levels? Anybody there?
I got to think, if Britt is elected, she now, barring that she becomes a more attractive candidate for even higher office, like a vice president or a cabinet post or something like that, she's young enough to be there a while. And she has been groomed for this job, going back to Girls State and Alabama SGA and then law school and everything. It's just she's going to be if history is sort of the indicator here, she could be a senator for a long time. I would say Jeff Sessions. You go back to Richard Shelby, obviously, the current occupant of that seat. But before that, Hal Heflin for a little while. You had Sparkman, Lister Hill. Those guys were around a long, long time. She kind of comes from that world, that mold, that machine, the old Alabama machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever she does in that time remains to be seen. But if she wins, I think that's the direction we're looking at. Now I would add to that down ballot, the one you can't help but wonder what would a Jim Ziegler Secretary of State look like?
Yes,
and I mean it could be. I think we underestimate Jim Ziegler. A lot of us, I do that sometimes. He's not as dumb as people think he is. He is a bomb thrower, and that can be a problem for him from time to time. But what's important to know about Jim Ziegler is, I mean, he was groomed in that whole machine world, too, of Alabama, University of Alabama politics. Now, he was outside of it, but he was a guy, he's been around a while. What will his public persona be if he is a Secretary of State? And you got to kind of wonder how that will play out historically, should he win today.
Yeah, and I agree. I think he's underrated, and it always seems like he gets the backing of a lot of, you know, blue-collar, you know, run-of-the-mill people, which so many of us are, of course. I don't mean that in a slight in any way, run-of-the-mill people, but he just gives that vibe that he's punching up at the elites, and that's something that people really like. Want you to get your take on one of my theories here, and this isn't an endorsement one way or the other, but speaking of bomb throwing, seeing some of the bombs that Andrew Sorrell threw in his time here in the Alabama state legislature. He's running for a position that could be sunsetted here. I can't recall what came of that during the last legislative session, but the money he has behind him, but more than that, he seems to me like someone who has, well, certainly higher aspirations than state auditor. He has the youth. To me, he seems like someone who's going to be sticking around in Alabama politics for a long time.
Yeah, and they're going to come for him. He's made some enemies in the legislature. He's not a guy that goes along to get along. And not in a – the legislature guys, you got to think of it like this. I had one member tell me this is how kind of it goes. If you're a freshman member, they give you a sheet of paper. This is what you're voting on today, and this is how you're going to vote, and this is how this is going to work. And Andrew Sorrell, when he got there, he just wanted to throw it in the trash. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. Never been willing to talk to those guys, and leadership kind of sees him as a thorn in their side, and I think they don't go down quietly. If he is the next auditor, I think they're coming for that office. He's got more enemies than Jim Ziegler has. They're coming from that office, and they're going to make the argument that it is redundancy, that it is waste of government. And it's not going to be necessarily about the office itself. It's going to be about the personalities that office seems to attract.
Very interesting. Well, Jeff, I'll see you tonight. We'll be live on the air. We will be on more than that. We'll be on Facebook. We'll be on YouTube. So I'll let you go. I know you got a lot to do before then, and appreciate your time today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Dalton. I really appreciate it.
All right. There you go. Jeff Poor, the Jeff Poor Show. If you missed the show today, well, you can listen to it after Midday Mobile on our podcast page, of course, like you can every day. And hopefully by 8 o'clock tonight, we'll have some answers and we'll go through that. And coming back, more Midday Mobile on the way. 251-343-0106. We'll get to some texts right after this.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, this is Midday Mobile. This is not Sean Sullivan. This is Dalton Orwig filling in for today. He has a great list of fellas that'll be covering for him over these next couple of weeks. And I hope Sean's having a good time on his travels right now. Well, outside, it's a downright dang cold 91 degrees. I don't know what happened. We were expecting higher highs today. A little rain came through, but still feels like 103. I'll take it at this point, as the next few days we're going to be seeing highs around 101, 103 some of these days. So this is about as good as it gets for now. Somebody on the text line texted about the Supreme Court decision. Dale texted in, and he's asking about vouchers because this ruling was regarding school vouchers, regarding a case in Maine. And maybe we can get to that here later in the hour, but the one decision that so many people are waiting to come down ever since the draft was leaked was, of course, I don't need to tell you, the Roe v. Wade decision, and it still has not come down. But people are fully preparing for it to come down and preparing in different ways. And I mentioned this on the morning show, but I guess a flyer has been circulating in D.C., and they took a picture of it here. It's reportedly from this group called Jane's Revenge, and it says, D.C. call to action, night of rage. The night SCOTUS overturns Roe v. Wade, hit the streets. You said you'd riot. It says, to our oppressors, if abortions aren't safe, you're not either. And it says more, and I'll get into that when we get back from the break, but what do you think the result will be from this? Under the Biden administration, will these riots take a different form than they did while Trump was president? How will police react? So many questions here, and want to hear from you on the text line, 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, Midday Mobile rolls on FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig in for Sean Sullivan today as the Nuge brings us back. Is that a good omen for Mo Brooks? I mean, he called into Jeff's show. He endorsed Mo Brooks. What does that mean? Can he pull off the big upset today on primary runoff day? And as you know, if you've listened to this station for any amount of time, something we like to do is find out what is it like at your polling place. I think most of us remember, I mean, just a couple years ago, 2020, how many of these polling places were just insanely packed, wrapped around the building, voting in the presidential election, Biden and Trump. Will we get that again come 2024? We'll discuss that here in a few. But so far today, at least the evidence we have on our text line, it does seem like turnout is as low or maybe lower than predicted. And let me tell you, the predictions weren't very high to begin with. John said just voted in Sims around 1220. They had 105 votes total to that point. So polls had been open for 5.5 hours, only 105 in Sims. And it's been like that throughout the day. I know Meg said that she voted around 1030 and 60 votes at her polling place. I went out and because my family, we moved towards the end of last summer. It's a new polling place for me. Last month was the first time I voted. I think it's on University. I think it's called Regency Church of Christ. I might have gotten it wrong. I know it's Church of Christ for sure. And it looked about as busy as it did when I voted last month. So I don't know what that means. I asked if they had low turnout or not, and two different people gave me two different answers. I obviously did not use the secret code like so many of you to find out exactly what vote number I was. But we'll see. We'll know a little bit later today. Bill says he just voted at noon in Citronelle and was voter number 36. But it certainly isn't looking like turnout will be very high. And that's something we'll discuss with Secretary of State John Merrill coming up at the top of the next hour. Plenty more to talk about with him. And then Dale East with Lanyap on some local topics joining us at 1:30. And B.A., appreciate the text. That's very kind of you. Although you may be delirious, because I know you work outside very often, and it's been incredibly hot. So I'll just assume that you aren't delirious and you're saying kind things because you're a kind person, which I choose to believe here. So we're talking about the Supreme Court decision that came down. And I mean, the longer this goes, the more nervous I actually am that the Supreme Court will turn on their Roe v. Wade decision that was leaked. The draft was leaked. Oh, it's been, I guess, a couple months now that they leaked that draft. And this isn't like it's some TV series. I mean, they don't have to hold on and hold on to build to the most, you know, tension in the entire nation before they finally release this statement and then let all hell break loose. They could have released this if they had it down. They could have released this, I guess, a month ago at this point, and they still haven't released the Roe v. Wade decision. And when they do, what will happen? Because right now, it seems, I mean, they haven't even released the decision, and you've seen what's been happening at some of these houses for the Supreme Court justices. So I mentioned this flyer that was going around D.C., and they're saying it's the Night of Rage. It's almost like you're at college or high school, and somebody posts up all around the halls, hey, come to my house for this party, whatever night. It says, D.C. call to action, and this is all set on a piece of paper. The background image is an image that I think so many of us have seen. It's someone throwing, I think, what amounts to maybe a Molotov cocktail during maybe one of the 2020 summer riots. So that's in the background, very, very, very discreet. And it says, D.C. call to action, Night of Rage. The night SCOTUS overturns Roe v. Wade, hit the streets. You said you'd riot. To our oppressors, if abortions aren't safe, you're not either. Signed, Jane's Revenge. And Jane's Revenge is this pro-abortion group that that has been around for at least some time. They've taken responsibility for several attacks on pro-life organizations, which is another part of this story. How many anti-abortion, you know, buildings or where these folks gather that have been firebombed or otherwise destroyed. And that goes certainly underreported in the media. But there was a letter from Jane's Revenge, reportedly, and they posted it to the Anarchist Library, which I'm guessing is one of these sites that, people get on and post. It says the impending decision is, quote, an event that should inspire rage in millions of people who can get pregnant. We need the state to feel our full wrath. We need them to be afraid of us. Whatever form your fury takes, the first step is feeling it. The next step is carrying that anger out into the world and expressing it physically. Consider this your call to action. On the night the final ruling is issued, a specific date we cannot yet predict, but we know is arriving imminently, we are asking for courageous hearts to come out after dark. And they ask people to make your anger known. They also released a statement saying the leash is off on four attacks on pro-life operations, promising violent attacks, quote, against oppressive infrastructure. Now, this is all, of course, just reported, what's reported. I'm not saying that this couldn't be someone, some troll trying to stir things up, or maybe someone who truly feels this way that is posting these things on behalf of this group, Jane's Revenge. But regardless, you know that that intent is out there, and that there are people that I'm sure will be very, very angry when this ruling comes down. And on this day where Alabama isn't the only state that's having primary elections, well, D.C., the mayor there, Muriel Bowser, is up for primary, and I think she's being primaried by two other candidates. We'll see. I think I've heard from some people in D.C. that, well, obviously conservatives are sick of the Bowser era, but I think even Democrats are kind of tired of it. Obviously, the crime is so high there, and there's so many issues, but what will be the response from D.C.? What will be the response from the feds if this turns into a serious situation where homes are being vandalized, where buildings are being broken into and burned down? The same things that we've seen in the recent past, will they react in any different manner? Do they have, you know, do they have the need to react in any different manner? Because I don't know. You would assume that riots near the nation's capital, if the nation can't get something under control, most people would frown upon that, right? That if businesses are being burned down, like we saw in 2020, and Bowser did, well, next to nothing to stop that, I'm not sure that this wouldn't fit the narrative for them. They keep saying that so many people will be incredibly offended by this decision by the Supreme Court. There are certainly factions out there that are trying to intimidate these justices into changing their vote. Once this comes down, I'm not sure that Biden or really any other liberal that's in charge, certainly there are liberals that won't be happy that it's happening, but the liberals that are in charge, I think they're going to let it happen. And that could be, you know, any time from now until July when that term ends. But that's what's going around D.C., this letter telling people to hit the streets. And it could be another one of those long nights where people are staying up just to see how out of control something like that gets. And we certainly saw that quite a bit during the summer of 2020. And that brings us to what happens after November, because all eyes and many eyes are at least giving a sideways glance to 2024 and the presidential race that's coming up. Because, I mean, as Trump has not officially announced that he's running, he keeps saying, hey, that announcement should be coming soon, but everyone knows what's going to happen. Trump is going to run for office, so the campaigning has begun. Whether DeSantis runs for office or not, he's still in that race to win re-election to be governor of Florida. But things are starting to settle in, and coming up after November or maybe just before November, we're going to start hearing a whole lot more about 2024. And Biden and his administration really could not have teed this up better for whoever ends up running in the Republican Party, whoever ends up winning that nomination. I mean, just some of the things that he's said this week, and you even have Hillary Clinton now saying that a lot of the platforms, and who knows how disingenuous she's being, but a lot of the platforms that the Democrats that are in charge have kind of, you know, put themselves on top of are not just not connecting with the majority of Americans, but not connecting with a majority of liberals. And I think she called it, what was the term she used? Basically, some of these and I'll call them side projects. Some people might be offended by that. But some of these very extreme minorities in the United States, like the drag queens and the trans rights and all of that, their focus on that is certainly turning off more than just conservative and independent voters. It's turning off a lot of Democrats, too. But just the optics alone, I mean, you could talk about Biden falling off the bike, and that's one thing, right? But I'm not going to focus on that. I'm going to focus on some of the things that Biden has said this week alone while he is near his vacation home there in, I guess he's at Rehoboth Beach in Virginia, and he had a bit of a presser yesterday. He had at least somewhat of a media gaggle around him as he was down on the beach. And the cost of fuel and just generally inflation came up. And he, just like his Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen recently said, just like so many in the Biden administration recently said, that they're almost making no bones about it now. They tried to cover it up a little bit, but a major incentive for them with the fuel prices the way they are, with this Russian invasion into Ukraine, is to speed up America's turn to green energy, which is a major reason why we're in the mess that we're in right now. Here's part of what Biden said yesterday. And it might be a little tough to hear. I'll try to get the audio so that you can hear it fine. But he basically said the fuel spike means it's a good time to shift to EV, electric vehicles, and green energy. Here's Biden from yesterday in Rehoboth Beach.
My dear mother used to have an expression. If anything lousy, something good will happen if you look hard enough for it. Mm-hmm. We have a chance here to make a fundamental turn toward renewable energy, electric vehicles, and not just electric vehicles, but across the board. And that's something we should be. My team is going to be sitting down with the CEOs of the major oil companies this week and try to get an explanation how they justify making $35 billion in the first quarter.
Are you planning to sit down with oil and gas CEOs,
no.
Mr. President? Why is that, sir?
Because my team's going to do that.
Okay. But you did that with retailers and logistics companies and consumer companies.
Because I had it already done.
I mean, he takes his own voters for fools. He said this entirely throughout his campaign. He said it during the debates. And then when these spikes hit, he's trying to work with these investors into these oil companies, and he's giving them all the blame. And then he turns around and he says, hey, this is a great time, a better time than ever to shift towards a future where we rely mainly on green energy. Why? Why would you put your money into any kind of, you know, fuel subsidy if that's what this administration is aiming towards? He also scolded, maybe it was the same reporter that was asking him there, but the scolder asked about the recession. Here's Biden yesterday.
That's my press secretary daughter.
Recession's even more likely than ever.
Not the majority of them are saying that. Come on, don't make things up, okay? Now you sound like a Republican politician. I'm joking. That was a joke. But all kidding aside, no, I don't think it is. I was talking to Larry Summers this morning, and there's nothing inevitable about a recession.
The inflation was transitory. And now there's nothing inevitable about an upcoming recession. And the question she asked, she mentioned Ukraine there, and then she didn't even say a majority of economists. She just said a number of economists, and he took that moment to punch down, certainly punch down at the reporter, and say she's acting like so many of the Republicans. But that's why I think they've teed this up for 2024, and that's why it's such an important decision for Republicans to put the right person in that primary to put the right person to win the primary and then run against whoever it may be that's the Democrat candidate in 2024. All they have to do, they don't even have to go in depth, all they have to do is talk about fuel prices and talk about inflation. That's what Trump was doing yesterday on Newsmax. Here's some of what he had to say.
We were at $1.87. If you think of that, $1.87 a gallon, and now you're going to be for gasoline, you're going to be at, I used to say 5, 6, 7. I think it's going to be much higher than that ultimately, but it's not sustainable. And now we're going to Venezuela. You're getting them indirectly from Russia and from Iran, going to Saudi Arabia, which he said he'd never do. And whether you agree with that or not, it's just ridiculous. But More importantly, it's right under our feet. We have liquid gold right under our feet. And we were taking it like never before, and now we're begging other countries to give it to us, but they're going green, and green isn't powerful enough. It can't fire up our plant. Not even close.
Remember the planks that Trump ran on back in 2015 running into 2016? And I remember that when he spoke at Ladd People Stadium. And the main things that stuck in my mind were, of course, him talking about the swamp and draining the swamp. He obviously didn't do a good enough job of that while he was up there. But so much of his talk was about jobs leaving the U.S. Remember, he talked about Nabisco moving their factories into Mexico. And he had certain things that were just an obvious and major hit with voters that weren't even necessarily that divisive on its face. He was saying things that most Americans felt at the time. And the number one thing that Americans feel come every election cycle that they vote with is their wallets and what's happening now. And with this recession, however long it may run, whether it turns into something worse, and with gas prices the way they are, with what's going on in Eastern Europe, they have absolutely teed this one up for whoever comes out of that Republican primary. And now that question will soon be, who will be that candidate? Will Trump run and win? Will they use some legal process to make sure he doesn't run? What about DeSantis? What about Pence? Pence has been talking a whole lot more about the upcoming run. We'll read your text. Coming back, 251-343-0106. This is Midday Mobile. Dalton Orwig in for Sean Sullivan.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Get more turnout numbers from you fine folks on the text line, 251-343-0106. This is Dalton Orwig filling in for Sean Sullivan. I'm sorry, Alan. Alan keeps asking for April Marie. He's very condescending. I don't think he notices, but he's a very condescending person. That's Leanna, you here? Next to me, we'll get to that in just a second. These texts, Meadow Lake Elementary School has a parking lot full with more turning in when I passed. That's good. And let's see here. CB Carl, my man, he said he was voter 81 at 940 in Bon Secours. So we'll see. We'll see what the turnout is. We'll have that number by tonight, certainly. And speaking of that, Jeff Poore and I, and you'll be here, Leanna.
Yes.
We'll be broadcasting live for a post-runoff election recap show beginning at 8 o'clock tonight. And you can listen to us on the dial 106.5, but you can also, if you're at home, turn on your computer, right? And very easy to subscribe and watch the live video.
Yeah, or even TV, smart TVs. You can
watch
YouTube. We'll be broadcasting live on YouTube and on Facebook, so you can keep up and watch the behind the scenes of doing radio.
And for some folks, it's easy to subscribe to something, certainly easier than others. But for those who maybe need a hand to hold them through it, how do you subscribe to either the YouTube or the Facebook page?
Okay, well, both pages are named FM Talk 106.5.
Mm-hmm. No point.
No point. Go to either one and make sure that you like the page on Facebook.
Okay.
And subscribe on YouTube, and then hit the bell so you get notifications of when we post videos. I've been posting interviews, including Sergeant John Young, the sheriff. There's a video of how jubilees happen. All kinds of stuff to watch on our YouTube channel.
Yeah, not saying you have to, but we want you to have that option. And some of those that you've posted have done really well, especially the Sergeant Young video. So check those out. It's never too late to go back and watch those. I appreciate it, Leanna.
Have a great day.
I'll see you here in just a second. John Merrill, Secretary of State, joins us next on Midday Mobile.